All right. Good evening, everybody. Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you again to Pamela for hosting this beautiful get together, learning discussion. I'm sorry that Joe is not here. I appreciate that you were willing to do it anyway. That shows tremendous team player.
Yes,
that we have it. So, but
I'm bringing.
Well, that's why Beth is back.
Yeah.
Oh, then you'll pick on me.
No, I haven't been here in 6 months.
It has not. I was here in November.
It felt like six months.
No, it's just more stuff coming out. I got too much stuff coming out. Anyway, okay. So I told Liz on the way up that I don't know what song I want to do tonight. I keep going back and forth and back and forth because the challenge for me is that obviously, what do I want to talk about tonight? What do I want to talk about? Purim. How can I not talk about Purim? Purim is in less than 2 weeks.
Yeah, what are you going to be? I always think if I could be a queen, why would I think further than that? But she wants to be Batgirl. She has a good Batgirl costume. So I'm like, okay.
Oh, first I thought you said a bad girl. I'm like, that's just not a good She's a great girl.
I mean, just as a dress up.
Just to see how the others live.
I don't know what day. Oh my gosh, you didn't see my son.
I saw him.
Oh, I didn't see that. You
I saw that. I saw him.
Okay, go on.
Well,
I don't know what I mean.
Well, I have something funny. Rabbi Tao, whose first name is Neil, said one time he was Neil Sadaka.
That's funny. Okay.
And this year.
That's very funny.
And the two Neils.
For the odds.
What are the odds? I don't know.
How does he spell it?
Neil Tao, he spells it like you do.
He does? N-E-I-L?
Mm-hmm.
There you go. That's my English.
Oh. Yeah. And they know.
But I go by Neil T.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he knows that.
Yeah.
Yes, I know that.
Yes.
Wonderful. Okay. You got that out of your system? Are you good?
I might try that again.
If it's okay, have some more
wine. You're
all talking. So I want to talk about Purim, but there aren't that many great songs that I can think of that are going to be like, you know, a famous queen. So, what?
Red Solo Cup.
Right? That's a good one. Right? So it's funny you say Queen. That was the first thing that came to my mind. Just choose any song from Queen.
Yeah.
Right.
And then,
but
we are the champions.
You did that one, though.
You weren't here.
I don't know what I'm doing.
So here's my thought, and I'm stuck between two of them, but I think I can combine them. Okay, I'll ask a simple question, and then we'll see. Why does the Torah begin with the letter Bet? One could argue and say the Torah should begin with the letter Aleph. That's the first letter in the Hebrew alphabet. Why does it start with the second? It's a fair question, right? Not only that, to compound the problem, the truth of the matter is that the Ten Commandments, which was God speaking to the whole Jewish nation, actually does begin with an Aleph. It starts, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am Hashem, your God, who took you out from the land of Eden. So it starts with an Aleph. So why not begin the whole Torah with that? Why does it start with a bet?
Well, maybe that's why. because the Ten Commandments is somehow first.
Okay, but this is the opening sentence of God's work. This is it. You want to tell me you chose some random letter in the middle? Fine, but you're off by one. Come on, you can't start with an Aleph.
Well, it was written by people anyway, codified, written down by people, but. My other idea is because the Aleph lends itself to other sounds. So the Bet has its...
That is true. The Aleph doesn't have its own sound. It's a silent letter, and it only takes the sound of whatever vowel is associated with it. That is true. That is true, but it doesn't really answer the question because God chose to use the Aleph to begin the Ten Commandments.
Isn't there a connection with the first letter in the Torah and the last letter in the Torah?
Of course.
So is that a good enough specification?
Oh, what's the word? What's the connection?
The last letter?
Yeah, what is the last letter?
What's the last word?
What's the last letter even?
I don't know.
Well, it would have to be a bet, wouldn't it?
Why?
Because if there's a connection.
What is it that ends with a like a lev?
Yeah.
What?
Got it.
That's so it's a lamed?
It's a lamed. It is. The very last word in the Torah is the word Yisrael. Yisrael, which ends with a lamed. And as we know, that on Simchat Torah in particular, where we finish the Torah reading, we immediately start again. So there's a wraparound, is what Liz is referring to, is where you go from the lamed wrap around to the bet, which spells the word lev, heart. Where the Torah is teaching us that ultimately what God wants from us is not robotic performance of things, but you have to put your heart into it. It's not all about just checklists. I ate kosher. I kept Shabbos. I did tzitzis. It's more than that. I'm sure I've shared this story with you. There was a story told about a young man who went over to the dean of the yeshiva that he was in. And he shared the wonderful news that he had finished the entire, what we call Shas, the entire Talmud. Quite an accomplishment. It's 60-something volumes. You're talking major information. And the response that the dean, that the Rosh Yeshiva, the head of the yeshiva, gave was somewhat lukewarm. He was very surprised. So the young man said, he was just assuming maybe he misunderstood. Maybe he thought he finished only one of the volumes. Oh, he says, no, Rebbe. I finished the entire Talmud, the whole Shas. And again, the response was very lukewarm. And he's like, why aren't you more excited? I mean, this is the whole compendium of Jewish law. He says, because I've been watching you over the years. And although it's true, you went through all of the Talmud, but it's clear the Talmud hasn't gone through you.
Wow.
Whoa. So in a way, that's how I think of it, where the Torah is teaching us, you can read through the whole Torah and see this mitzvah and that commandment and this thing, that. But where's your heart? It has to be with feeling, with a sense of connection with it. It's not robotic. So that's one, perhaps, message that's learned from it. But something for tonight is a different way of looking at it. Is everyone familiar with what a bet looks like? Mm-hmm. Right? It's basically something like this. Okay, that's a
probably
fair.
Shorter.
Okay, it has a top piece. It has a long vertical piece. And then a bottom piece, which has a little tail sticking past the vertical piece. Right? That's basically your bet. It's closed on three sides and only open on one side. Some were suggesting that the symbolism of the letter bet is teaching us about looking forward, of not looking back, of not getting caught and stuck in our past. Meaning, if you want to know about the Torah, or you want to know about Hashem creating the universe and giving us all of this, what am I supposed to do with this? Oh my God, I'm going to fail. There's no way I can do all this. In fact, let's be honest. Every Rosh Hashanah, don't we go through this painstaking process that we look at our, should be looking inward, introspection, and saying, all right, I'm going to try better this year.
Please.
Really? I mean, I'll try, but I failed so many times before. Am I the only one that fails at all? Right? First thing that the Torah starts with, look forward. Yes, there's a little tail at the bottom. Yeah, every now and then, take a look. See where we've come from, what things we can correct. Okay, that's true. You have to take that. But your main focus, right? Again, in Hebrew, it's in that direction. It goes from right to left. So the opening of the bet is facing the forward direction, going forward. This is a theme that really fits very much in line with Purim. And the song, therefore, is from the Beatles.
Tomorrow.
Pelosi, we did that. No, there's no song tomorrow, but
you
got the
yesterday.
Yesterday. Yesterday. You ever listen to those lyrics? Right? Can we play it?
Yes, sure.
Alexa.
Play Yesterday by the Beatles.
Wow, that's a spring master. I'm not half the man I used to be. Let the shadow hanging over.
Nice song. I was just going
to
say,
I'll tell you what, it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you hear the regret. Wants to go back to the way it was. I don't know why she left me. What happened?
Oh, is there something wrong with me?
I longed for yesterday. It is very sad. It's very
sad. That was such an easy game to play.
I'm exactly sure why he calls it a game.
I she had to go, I don't know. She will be safe. I said something wrong. Now I look for yesterday.
Is it Lennon or was it
Paul McCartney? All by himself, actually.
It was such an easy game to play.
Is he married?
He was dating.
Lennon McCartney?
Nope. Another one. What was that? Jane. Lauren, you're 100% right. It has such a sad tone. I mean, it captures it beautifully, but it's so sad. He's longing for yesterday. I'm half the man I used to be. Ah. It's almost like you can hear him crack. That, ladies and gentlemen, is not a Torah perspective. Yes, it's not. It's not, because it's one of the strongest ploys of our evil inclination and to get us depressed and to get us stuck that we don't move forward. It's so easy to just wallow in pity and say, the good old days. And what do you do about it? Nothing. You sit on your duffy and you just have pity, self-pity. Terrible approach to life. Yes, of course there are regrets. We wish we should have done things differently. Fine. That's why we have a Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. That's why it's on the calendar. Now we are to look back now and then and say, I should be better. Okay. But don't get stuck. I always wonder, whoever made up this calendar really should have really done a better job. I mean, the beginning of our Hebrew year is brutal. You go right from Rosh Hashanah, boom, you're 10 days, you got Yom Kippur. 4 days later, you're into Sukkot. A week later, you got Simchas Torah. I mean, it's like, good Lord, can't you spread this out a little? There's brilliance involved with this. First of all, it's not people. In the Torah, it says when to do this. So, okay, so let's not give total credit to these guys. However, there's real brilliance, because it's clear that the feeling of Rosh Hashanah is a serious tone. I don't want to say sad. It's serious. Yom Kippur, although many will say it's sad, I don't believe that is the case. I find it extremely challenging day, but an uplifting day, an exhilarating day, because I get a new slate. God is willing to forgive the idea of let's start anew. Let's start fresh. That's wonderful. It has to be earned and you have to go through the process. Agreed. But but the Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur season is a serious tone. And before you have a chance to wallow in any level of pity, boom, you have the holiday of Sukkot. What's the feeling of Sukkot?
Joy.
It's unbelievable joy. In fact, it's called Zman Simchatenu. It's the time of our joy. We move immediately. And not for one day like Rosh Hashanah, or 2 days like Rosh Hashanah, or one day like Yom Kippur. How many days is Sukkot? 7, 8. If you add in Simchas Torah here in the Da, it's 9 days of joy and celebration. Because that's really the mode that we're supposed to be. The modality of joy and appreciation of moving forward. Don't look back so much.
Okay, but
please.
Just wondering. Because part of the beauty of Pesach is that you're learning from
the past
before.
Beautiful.
This is history. This is what it is. If you never do that
100%.
Personally or in the outer, your understanding of the outer world, I mean, where are you? You're nowhere. You
excellent, excellent point. I was going to speak that out, but your point is very well taken. I'm not saying never look at the past. What I'm saying is don't wallow in the past. Don't get stuck on the regrets of yesterday. You have to look to the past. There is no people on earth that are more entrenched in looking to the past to know how to go for the future than us. There's no people like us. We're known as the people of the book. What book? The book from 3,300 years ago. Nothing new. We have to look to the past. It's an absolute must. I think I shared with you, maybe in the last class, if there's a mitzvah, the very last mitzvah in the Torah is to write a Sefer Torah, is to write a Torah, right? Some people, so many synagogues will have a whole ceremony, right? There's a way to do it. There's a whole question. What if my parent wrote it? And then the person's parent passes away and bequeaths it to their child. Does that child now have fulfilled their mitzvah?
No.
Why? They have a Torah.
But you have to make it.
Why? Let's think about why. Why does the Torah say I should write a Torah?
Because we need another Torah.
Why?
Because each one is precious. So
why? We have printed books now. Hey, what? What? Only you can ask the hard questions?
Yes. You answer. I give the opportunity to learn to more people. Yeah.
How many of us want that? In the old days, I understand. In the old days, when they didn't have printed books, right? The only way to learn was they actually opened up the Torah scroll and they learned from it because there was no handy-dandy.
Make a safer Torah.
I do. But I'm asking you, nowadays, I don't need to write more Torahs. Oh, I have printed ones that you and I can.
That's how you
learn. I'm learning.
But you're right.
I didn't bring Pamela. If I felt that we had to learn from the Torah, then every time I came to this class, I would bring my big fancy schmancy big Torah from Shoresh, and we would open it up
so
on
what
the
does
thing.
That mean?
So I'm asking you. So
writing the Torah.
Well, there's
it.
That's what I have.
Okay.
Wait. Are you a scribe?
No.
I'm not a scribe
so
either.
That's not what they're asking. Make a say.
Well, if I write the Torah, ain't nobody going to learn from it because my handwriting is terrible.
It means to bring it into the world.
Right?
Is that what
it means?
And
what?
It means to bring one into the world. It's not literal. You have to write it yourself. You have to make one happen.
Make one happen.
Yeah, but we don't make one happen. I mean, in our whole synagogue, since I've been there, nobody has
written a Torah.
Or, yeah, I mean,
as,
added to
well,
or
now
the time they're on.
Okay, so let me.
Yeah, we can't.
So, one thing. Okay, so I'm gathering
so,
we didn't talk about this.
Wait, but
so,
what I'm saying is when you said, maybe I didn't get it, but everybody should make a Torah.
Right.
Well, then.
What is
there would be
okay.
so
okay.
many
right.
Amoras.
Right.
They would become worthless.
No, no such thing.
Well,
no such thing.
I mean, depending if you didn't do it perfectly right.
Well,
of
course
you're
going to do it right. Beth, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it right.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one way. The only one way.
You do it right.
Did you tell your children to do things happy?
No, but at the time they were doing it, they did.
They did their best. That's right. But did you train them to do it halfway?
Yeah.
Of course not. We're going to do our best. 100%. And that's why I, Tzvi Tachman, will not be writing a Torah anytime in this lifetime. No way, Jose. Because I can't do it. I'm not a scribe. It's going to come out gibberish. And therefore, to answer the question, how can one fulfill the mitzvah? There's two easy ways to do it. One, using Liz's approach, and that is you commission it. I can't write it, but I'll hire a scribe to go ahead and write it, and it's my Torah. I'll pay for it. Or I'll join together with 100 other people and we'll commission it. That's fine. What they say is as follows. Listen to this. No, you can't use Xerox.
Is that
not
one
yeah,
or
it's
going to
be
the
real deal. No, it's all still one. It's all still one of where it's an actual Torah scroll. And since they're quite expensive, what typically will happen is that you join forces with others. And here's the thought process. Let's say you have a Torah in your synagogue, okay? And unfortunately, one of the letters gets rubbed out and erased. What's the status of that Torah right now? It's invalid. Even though it's not the section you're reading from that week. It could be weeks and weeks earlier or weeks and weeks later. If one letter, even one letter is missing, the whole Torah becomes invalid. That's the law.
So what if you don't notice it?
Okay, so then you have to fix it when you can.
But you can still proceed.
Well,
ignorance is...
No, it's not.
But a
second.
Okay.
What?
She was going to say ignorance is bliss, and I stopped her. It's not true.
Ignorance
is ignorance, and you have to correct it. In that situation, well, I've seen it happen. Where they're reading, and then like, oh, okay, that's a problem.
I just noticed it now. It's
then
been
they,
all
what they'll do is they will close it up, and they'll pull out a different one.
And then what will they do with that one?
After Shabbos, or after they'll bring it to a spot.
And they fix it in Borough Park. I'm sorry.
What if they only
it's not only in Borough
Park.
Nothing.
Oh, so
it's not
it,
valid.
You have to get rid of it.
No, of course you can fix it.
But when you say it's not valid, does that mean that
it means from that point going forward. What you read before, you didn't know. That's where ignorance is bliss. You didn't know that it was missing a letter three columns from now.
Right. So when you say it's not valid, does that mean that the prayer or that
the reading of
that you're doing
is now you have
you
to stop.
You didn't do it.
It's yeah. Now it's you're reading it from an invalid time.
Go back and start.
Okay, that's a whole different question.
Right.
Let's just I don't want to get into that. The point being that one letter missing invalidates the whole Torah. Huh?
Nothing. Sorry. I said no. I want to get into that. I was kidding. No, I don't.
What
does this have to do with her?
Okay, I'm trying to get there. I'm really trying.
Thank you.
Oh my!
It's like, and the sad song.
You're not serving wine.
So here you go. That's Purim for you. Have some more wine.
I'm just trying to
connect
yesterday
and
firm, and
right.
I'm not there.
Right, we're not there yet.
Okay.
We're not there yet. Nope,
okay.
Nope. I'd say you are the only one on the ball right now.
All right.
The point that I'm making with this Torah, and it's invalidated by one letter, that means that if I go ahead and I add one letter to the Torah, and I now validated the whole Torah, right? If I fix that one letter,
You didn't add it, you fixed it.
Let's say I fixed it, but I now made the entire Torah. It's as if it was invalid, and now it's valid. So that's what many, many places do when they have the Torah writing ceremony, is they commission, and you write, you can hold the scribe's hand, or if your calligraphy is decent, they'll let you, whatever. You can write one letter. It's as if you wrote a whole Torah, because you validated the whole thing.
Because if it's invalid, it's almost like
it's correct. It's not there. And it doesn't only have to be that one letter. Your letter and your letter, each one of us's letter is validating a whole Torah.
So we need to go out and find.
Okay.
So
no, you don't need to. No, you don't have to do that. You can have a whole Torah written. Okay. I should really invite you to do this. We're going to do this one day. Lean at it. Okay? Lean at it. We're going to do this one day. Okay. Long story. We're going to go ahead and we're going to hire and we're going to commission a scribe to write from the first letter to the last.
Now, I'm in for one word.
Okay.
I'm in for one letter.
Okay. Fabulous. Okay. What will happen is that the scribe will write 98% of it before we have the ceremony. Okay. If you give me a chance, it actually makes sense. So he'll leave the last, I don't know, 40, 50, depending on however many people are expecting to be a part of the ceremony. He'll leave the last 50 letters, the last 80 letters, whatever it is. And there's a big deal. Remember in the office, Shelley was asking me, they had a whole party. There was just one of these done in Baltimore yesterday with a synagogue.
That's where it's going.
Yesterday,
compared
to the person who wrote
98%,
he doesn't get credit.
Of the case,
he doesn't want credit.
One second.
Time out. Whoa. I wrote one letter. Well, that you wrote the Torah.
Well, everybody gets to do that. That's my point. Everybody gets it. The scribe is being paid. That's his job. It's you hired him. No problem. And he gets lots of credit. There you go. So going to, I've done it a few times. Thank you.
Doing a letter.
Okay, so all of you can make fun of me all you want. Thank you. Proof positive. That's how they do it.
It was very thrilling.
Isn't it? And you fulfill.
Oh, I don't know. It was a very. I felt
yes
a thing.
You felt
the thing. I fulfilled.
Here's the second way. The second way is as follows. If the rationale, one of the thought processes, I should say a rationale behind this mitzvah of writing Torahs is that there's availability for people to learn, because again, before the printing press, the only thing they had to study Torah was an actual scroll. The thought process being that if you go ahead and you purchase and you have a library of Torah books, you fulfill that mitzvah because you have made available knowledge about Torah. You can fulfill it that way. Easy peasy. Many, many authorities are of that opinion. So if you haven't done the Torah scroll thing itself, go out and purchase your chumash, purchase of it. You fulfill the mitzvah because you're promulgating and increasing Torah study by having the Torah books.
And then you can celebrate for them.
And okay. My question now is, if someone's parent wrote a Torah, okay, this is where we're getting back to this, okay, and they pass away and they now, the children inherit it, have the children fulfill the mitzvah. So stop. There's two possible answers now. If it's based on the first rationale, and that is you physically have to go ahead and write the Torah, then he didn't do it yet, even though he got a Torah. If you look at it from the second perspective, one could argue, yes, there's a Torah scroll here available.
If you make it available.
Okay. One could argue, the flip side, the counter argument is, I didn't increase anything. I just got what my parent gave me. Most authorities say, you have not fulfilled that mitzvah by getting it from your parents. You have to do it. You have to be a part of it.
So why don't we get from this and take into a full
they tell you you have completed the mitzvah?
I don't know.
Well, it's the mitzvah of bar mitzvah.
Well,
no?
What mitzvah of bar mitzvah is it?
Oh, yeah, but you know.
I don't think there is one.
I hate to break it to you.
It's a hunch, and they say you have now completed the mitzvah. That's the sisterhood said that.
Right. You'll have to ask the sisterhood. it could be just in a manner of speaking that you have now performed a ceremony that shows your love and dedication for the Torah and your Judaism. That could be, and it's a borrowed term. But there's a list of 613 commandments. Mm-hmm. There's none of them that says else. Mm-hmm. And really? there's none that says bar about mitzvah.
But you may have done something during that.
Okay, that's
did
fine.
One of those.
That was
absolutely.
They're all up.
Right. Yeah, there really are a lot that we do that you don't even know you're doing.
Yeah, and ones that we don't do that is exactly what we're not supposed to be doing.
Right.
I mean,
right. I mean, I don't think anybody murdered anyone today.
Or,
and if you have, please don't tell me.
Or slept with their brothers. I'm doing them all day long.
Fabulous. Do you know that Maimonides writes there are 365 negative commandments and 248 positive. He asks a very simple question. Why are there more negatives than positives? One answer that he proposes is because they give us opportunities to fulfill them much easier. Much easier to withhold ourselves from doing. 365 of them, you know, like, don't murder, don't commit adultery, don't steal, don't. Ding, 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 ding. Fabulous. As opposed to, you have to do this and you have to do that. That's a little harder. That takes a little more effort and more commitment. So Maimonides suggests that's one of the reasons why this is more negative than positive. You're able to fulfill. Okay. This idea of not getting lost in the past. Again, using Pam's idea. Not that we don't look to the past. We have to look to the past. We commemorate historical events. We relive them every year. But what I mean to say is that the ploy of the Yetzer Hara, the ploy and strategy of the evil inclination for us not to be positive, to not move forward, not to grow, by having us look back in regrets constantly. Oh, yesterday, it's a sad tune. This is not what it's all about. Here's a very interesting concept. In Israel, well, let's start this one. In the Megillah, again back to Baruch. In the Megillah, it describes the fact that they celebrated the holiday on two different days. Right? You're familiar with this? On the 14th of Adar and on the 15th of Adar. What's the difference? Everywhere else was on the 14th, but in the city of
Shushan,
the capital city, they celebrated it on the 15th. Okay? The Megillah continues that going forward, that's the way it's going to be. Walled cities, like the city of Shushan, was a walled city. Any walled city like Shushan is to celebrate on the 15th. All non-walled cities would celebrate on the 14th. So here in America, there's no city that's walled from the times of Joshua. So everybody reads it on the 14th of Adar. Everybody. Why what?
Why do you have to celebrate it on a different date if you're walled and not walled?
Because in Shushan, there was an extra day of taking vengeance against our enemies, they mandated that because you had that extra day, your main day was the day you rested. We all rested on the 14th from our enemies. They rested on the 15th. So in commemoration of the miracle that was in Shushan itself, being a walled city, they said similarly walled cities should be like Shushan.
So in Dubrovnik, they would celebrate it.
Well, I don't know how old the wall of Dubrovnik is. Is it from the time of Joshua? I don't know, but you know of a city. You do know of a city that's walled since the time of Joshua. Very famous city.
Jerusalem.
Yeah, I know that song. Right. Jerusalem to this day, outside of Israel, in Tel Aviv, and Eilat, and in Haifa, and all these other cities, they celebrate Purim on the 14th in Yerushalayim. In Jerusalem, it's on the 15th to this day. Okay. What if you're...
Israelis in America.
There, they shouldn't be.
I'll make a note.
If they've moved here, then they've given up that. Now they're here.
They're American.
I thought there was some of the holidays first.
Well, I don't know what that means.
Start drinking on the 14th.
Well, yes, there are many. There are many that will go and they'll celebrate. They'll celebrate. See, sometimes, interestingly enough, Purim will fall out on a Friday. This year, it falls out on a Saturday night, Sunday. But sometimes it'll fall out on a Friday, in which case, it's a three-day festival. I mean, it's crazy because first day you do outside Jerusalem, then you come to Jerusalem and you have another day. It's a big party. Then you have Shabbos. Okay. Anyway, it's pretty cool. Anyway, but here's the interesting question. What if somebody from Tel Aviv comes down to Jerusalem and is in Jerusalem the night of, let's say, the 13th? They came for 3 or 4 days. So they're there on the 13th of Adar, and they're there on the 14th of Adar, and they're even there the night of the 15th of Adar. Now, back in Tel Aviv, they read it already the night of the 14th. And then again on the day of the 14th, right? Because we read it at night and by day for most places. Okay? But he wasn't home. He was in Jerusalem. What's his status?
He has to come back and do it again. Okay. In his hometown.
Well,
is that what you're saying?
I'm asking you, is he obligated to go back to Tel Aviv on the 14th, knowing that's where he's planning on being the rest of his year? He just happens to be in Jerusalem for that day or 2 days. Or is he allowed the status of a Jerusalemite? And he gets to read it on the 15th. It's a good question. It happens. Mm-hmm. People travel. What about vice versa? If somebody from Jerusalem wants to go visit his aunt and uncle in Tel Aviv,
can't you wait a day?
Well, you
can. Yeah, I was going to say, tell him to go a different day.
Well, that's...
It's very nice. You guys are all so nice and generous on someone else's
do
time.
The mitzvah on the time that you're where you are.
So technically, here's a good question. That's an excellent question.
Yeah.
The issue is that you are no residence in Jerusalem. You're from Tel Aviv. Your hometown is Tel Aviv. You're bound. For example, when I go to Israel, okay? Let's say I go there over the holiday of Sukkot, okay? When should I celebrate it? In America, I keep 2 days Sukkot. I keep the first day and the second day as both holidays, right? And then my intermediate days begin. In Israel, they only have 1 day. The second day of Sukkot is already a Chol HaMoed. It's intermediate day.
So do they have an Chol HaMoed day?
Yes.
So yes.
It's only 1 and 7 that are the holidays.
Okay.
The actual Yom Tov. Okay? The intermediate days in between. Here, outside of Israel, there's 2 days because it used to be a calendrical doubt what day where it was. So we keep 2 days. So 2 in the front and then 1 plus an extra at the end. The rest are into... But what about day 2? Here in America, I keep it as a full-fledged Yom Tov.
Yeah.
1 second. That proposal is pretty good. Okay? I keep it as a full-fledged holiday. In Israel, they don't. It's a Chol HaMoed. It's an intermediate day. What should I do? The answer is, if I intend to return home and I'm not taking up residence, I'm not making Aliyah, I'm bound by where I'm supposed to be. So I would keep 2 days, even in Israel.
Wait, not where you are.
Correct.
It's not
correct.
In Rome.
It's right. It's normally 99% of the time in Halacha, it goes where your real residence is. And the fact that you're visiting somewhere doesn't change your status. You're not a resident of that place. However, I'll just cut to the chase. When it comes to the law of Purim, the law changes. The law changes, and we give it. You'll understand why. And you'll understand why. If you're in, again, in the other place, Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, whichever one you want to be, right, is at the day that it's supposed to be in the place you are currently, you take up residence of that place. You have the status. Even a resident of one day. It's in the Talmud. It says, Paruz ben Yomo, Karu Paruz. A villager on the day of when he's not in the village, he's not in the village. He's called it enough. That's his status. He gets the status of the place he's in, even just the one day. They're suggesting the reason is because the message of Purim, I'll show you how this fits, is all about today. Looking at it today. What is happening today?
Not yesterday.
Not yesterday. Mm-hmm. And we'll see in a moment with Haman, not tomorrow either. We get caught up in our regrets of yesteryear, and we sometimes become paralyzed with anxiety, what's going to be tomorrow? Mm-hmm. And both bookends are trouble. Yes, you have to look. You can't look only at the here and now. You have to have a broad picture. You have to look to the future. But if you get paralyzed by your regrets in the past and you get paralyzed by what's going to be in the future, you're doomed. That's not how we look at it. You have to look at the current time. What happens in the Purim story? What happens? We find a couple of things that seem very, very strange. For example, Esther's been hiding her Jewishness all this time. And finally, Mordechai gives Esther the go-ahead to go ahead and to share with King Ahasuerus to save her people. So what does she do? She calls a private party with three people. She, King Ahasuerus, and Haman. Strange, strange way to deal with it. If you want to get the private audience with the king so you can plead your case, I'm inviting Haman. He's the last guy you want. You know he's the troublemaker. You want a private audience with the king, don't you? So he can get rid of the edict. Why are you inviting Haman? Well, wait, it gets worse. At that first party, the three of them are there. And King Ahasuerus, very magnanimous. My dear queen, up to half the kingdom, whatever you want. Tell me, dear, what do you want? What does she ask for?
My recollection is that she's asking for justice about somebody who is underpinning.
Not yet. You're right, but not yet. She asks for a second pardon the very next day. For whom? Same three people. King Ahasuerus, Queen Esther, and Haman. Bizarre. What is she doing? And finally, at the second party, finally King Ahasuerus says, okay, tell me, what do you want? She says, well, there's someone out to destroy my people. And she gives the whole sob story. Ding! It's Haman! Woo! Right? Everything. Oh, okay. What? What's going on in Haman? He has to be asking himself. He knows he's the troublemaker. He knows that. But he doesn't know that Esther's a Jew. He doesn't know that. He just knows that Mordechai. Yeah. Right? That Mordechai, that Jew. But he doesn't know about Esther. So fine. So the first day he gets invited, he's thrilled. He goes home and he tells his wife, what's his wife's name? Extra, get an extra banana.
Wait,
no.
Keep talking.
You don't ask Alexa. Don't Google it. Where are you going? Okay. Come on, no cheating allowed. Okay.
His wife is, well, I know it. I just have bad memory.
Okay. Zeresh. You're thinking of Vashti.
Yeah.
But that's Ahasuerus' wife.
Oh, that's the one. See what I'm thinking.
Because
okay.
You got to be careful.
Enough.
So she falls to the path first.
Esther?
Yes.
So
Mordechai tells her to do this. She tells him, make it.
I'm willing to go in. I'm going to risk my life, but need you to gather the Jews and make sure we beseech God that it be a successful mission.
And then is it after the fast?
Right,
after,
on the third day. Yes. Okay? But think about this. Haman is all excited. He goes home and tells his wife, Zeresh,
somebody.
Dude, I'm in. Oh my gosh, I'm in. Exactly. Do you know who you're talking to? It's me, king and queen, just us. He's thrilled. He comes back after the first party. He's like, does the dream come true? Oh my gosh. How does he not see the trap he's about to fall into? How can he not see this? What were the words Esther said? Esther says, after the first party, says, machar. What's machar? Tomorrow, we're going to have another party. Haman thinks to himself, ooh, I don't know what nation she's from, but she's definitely not Jewish. Because the Jews don't think that. The Jews are about today. The Jews are about, how do I galvanize and capture and seize the moment of the day? She's not talking like that. She's talking about tomorrow, think about it the day before. He doesn't see this coming.
It's a connection.
Boom.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. There's throughout this Purim story, you find this concept. Haman is from what nation? The historical nation.
Amalek.
Amalek. Okay? For those who may not know, Amalek is the nation that attacked the Jewish people on the way out of Egypt.
And where were they?
Where do they normally live?
Yeah.
At the time, I would say, at the time of the Exodus, they were more at the northern part of Israel.
Gaza?
No, north. Gaza, south. Okay. They were further north. Further north. Okay? Which is part of the treachery that we weren't anywhere near their land when we left Egypt. And they came down specifically to attack. The treachery of Amalek, that's really the line from which Haman comes. Haman is from that line, okay? The whole story of Purim, it's all about this nation of Amalek, again, trying to annihilate the Jewish people, okay? Haman, as I said, he comes from Amalek. The first attack that Amalek has against the Jewish people, as I said, right, the Exodus, it's an attack from the rear. It's a surprise attack from the rear, and they affected all those that were stragglers, the old, the infirm, the women, the children. Sound very familiar? Just saying. Okay? And it's the treachery of such a heinous way to do it. So fine. Moshe tells the Jewish people we have to fight against them. So he appoints, quote-unquote, as the general, a man by the name of Joshua. You know his name because ultimately he's the successor after Moshe passes away. Joshua leads the Jewish people into the land of Israel. Okay? Joshua is the general at that war. What happens? I'll read you the expression, and I want you to listen for a word in particular. Amalek came and battled Israel in a place called Rephidim. Moses said to Joshua, choose people for us and go do battle with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand. Joshua did as Moses said to him, to do battle with Amalek. Moses, Aaron, and Hur ascended to the top of the hill. It happened that when Moses raised his hand, Israel was stronger. And when he lowered his hand, Amalek was stronger. Moses' hands grew heavy, so they took a stone, put it under him, and he sat on it. And Aaron and Hur supported his hands, one on this side and one on that side, and he remained with his hands in faithful prayer until sunset. Joshua weakened Amalek and its people with the sword's blade. And then we have the next story. Anything, I mean, if this is new to you, then it's all shocking, but anything strike you about?
Tomorrow I'll do it.
Tomorrow. Very good. Amalek came and battled Israel. Moses said to Joshua, choose people for us and go do battle with Amalek. Tomorrow, I will stand on top of the hill with the, right? Is that a good thing or a bad thing, what Moshe says? Push it off till tomorrow. Based on what we're saying tonight, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
We'll deal with it tonight.
It's a bad thing. We should deal with it right away. Commentaries point out, what happens in the rest of that story? Moses is up there. and his hands get tired.
His
hands go tired. What's up with that? The Torah is telling us, okay, I get it. It's possible. It's a physical reality, keeping your hands up for so long, you get there. But why is the Torah telling me? What is the significance that his hands grew tired and he needed to sit somewhere and he had to have people hold him? Some of the commentaries point out that Moshe made a mistake. He should not have waited till tomorrow. You act on an inspiration when?
Now.
Now. Don't push it off. You have to do it. And for that, I don't want to say punish, but it became more difficult for Moshe to do his job. And his hands were tired. And he needed extra support. Why? Because he didn't capitalize on the moment. You give a Amalek one extra day, you know what they're going to do with it? Use it against us. Don't give it to them. There's a delicate balance of what I'm trying to convey, of where we do look to the past and we do have an eye to the future. But there is a certain sense of capitalizing and seizing the moment of today. Not to lose sight that this is the opportunity we're given. Here's another example in the Purim story, okay? You have those that are rush, 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 quick, let's do it without thinking. I'm not suggesting that that's what I'm talking about. That's also not a good trait. That sense of impetuous and just jumping at every little thing. There needs to be a certain patience. But when it comes time to do something, do it now. Act on it immediately. Don't procrastinate. Don't push it off. The worst trait is laziness. It's the worst. Because then you can't grow.
So what if you hurry and prepare as quickly as you can, but you're not ready for tomorrow? Is that still a negative?
Meaning you did everything you could, and if realistically you can't do it till tomorrow? That's fine.
So if Moshe said, let's do this,
that's different.
And as soon as we're ready,
correct,
I'm going to go on with it.
Correct.
That
I'll give you an example. Let's talk about another episode. I wasn't planning on this, but you got me going. Great. Okay? The sin of the golden calf. We're all familiar with that? Mm-hmm. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. Not a great episode in our history. Moshe's up on the mountain, right? He's supposedly, right? He's getting the whole Torah. Okay? Who's down below? Who's leading the Jewish people?
Aaron.
The Jews come to him because they think Moshe is not coming back. Mm-hmm. They're off by their calculation by only, unfortunately, one day. Right, they're counting day 39, day 40, messed up. Okay, Moshe was gonna come the next day, but they freaked out. So they go to Aaron and they say, "We need a leader. We need something, and let's build a golden calf."
In one day, they did that.
I mean, excuse me. They did that in one day.
What? Built the golden calf?
Yeah.
Yeah, that happened in the moment. It was instantaneous. They threw it into the fire. And out it came.
Oh.
Now, this is a really good book. I recommend it.
It's not.
They didn't have to buy everything.
You don't want to embarrass me because that's like murder, right? So.
It's a great book, this thing called Tara. It's worthy reading.
They didn't have to get the quotes.
Right, exactly.
The board.
What's fascinating, they came.
They had okay. The mouse hold the knob.
So wait, they had it corrected. Listen to this. That they come to Aaron and they want to do this. What's Aaron's response?
Wait, I don't know.
Yeah. Listen to this.
Ding, ding, ding.
You were there?
It was Zooming.
She was still like, I got Jewel.
Here. Yeah. The people saw that Moses had delayed in descending the mountain, and the people gathered around Aaron and said to him, "Rise up, make for us gods that will go before us, for this man Moses who brought us up from the land of Egypt, we do not know what became of him." Aaron said to them, "Remove the rings of gold that are in the ears of your wives, sons, daughters, and bring them to me." The entire people removed the gold rings that were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. Right? They're not going home to take their wives. They're like, "Here, take ours." Men. The men. The women wanted no part of this, by the way.
We didn't,
the
women couldn't
yeah, yeah.
I can't say
the women were no part of this. The women were.
Why?
Because they were smart. They knew this was a faithful thing.
They knew they had faith. They just witnessed the most amazing year of plagues. They witnessed the splitting of the sea, manna falling from heaven.
Well, that's.
Careful.
That's good. I like that.
Good. The women were far more smart than the men. Well, wait, I want you to hear this. He took it from their hands and bound it up in a cloth, fashioned it into a molten calf. They said, "This is your God, O Israel, which brought you up from the land of Egypt." Aaron saw, built an altar, etc., etc., etc. Aaron's first response was, "Let's delay. Go home. Bring me back your wife's jewelry." And they're like, "Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to happen. They're not giving it up.
We'll buy ourselves a little time, right? Good thing or bad thing?"
He was hoping they did wouldn't happen.
Of course, exactly. Because if he delays one day, guess who's going to show up?
Moses. So did he know that the count was off?
He knew Moshe was coming.
Okay.
Now, why was their count off?
Meteor.
Yeah, because when Moses went up and he told them, "I'm going to be up there 40 days and 40 nights," he went up by day. They counted the day he went up as day one. That was not, it had to be a day of night and day. So therefore, when they calculated that as day one, fast forward 40, it's only 39. Yeah. He was coming back tomorrow.
Be freaking out one day early.
Because they don't know it's one day early. They only know. Put yourself in their position. You have been slaves for hundreds of years. But you've been slaves.
Miracles.
Through whom? Who was your leader?
Moses. Yeah.
Now your leader is gone. I'm flipping out. I don't know what to do. I can't have, in their mind, they don't know. How can we have a relationship direct with God?
Did he say, "Give me a few, I'll be back soon"?
For 40.
40 days. Why didn't they give him another day? And his brother was there. Who was a spiritual leader?
Great question. So Aaron did, there was, you remember I mentioned Hur?
Yeah. But why?
You know what happened to Hur? You know what happened to Hur when he said Moshe's coming tomorrow?
They killed him.
That's correct.
Oh, that's terrible.
That's correct. Yes. So Aaron made a quick calculation.
Wow.
If I'm going to go ahead and protest also, they're going to kill me. Then they're in real God that's ours. Have to translate? You can use your imagination. Okay? They're in deep, you know them. Okay? Right.
So today, early in the morning, Yahoo is addressing the message. And he responded to Biden, who wants to push off the attack on Rafah. And he said, "We have learned you must attack when the time is right, not wait till tomorrow."
Maybe he's got the Purim lesson down pat.
Well, that's what he said to him.
I didn't hear that today. There's no question in my mind that there's a balance. And that's what I'm really trying to say. There's rushing impetuously and saying, "Okay, we got to do it right now, right now." That's not a right approach either. You have to be thought out. You have to have the patience to think it through strategically. What's the right thing to do? But then when it comes time to do it, don't wait. It requires action, then do it. Don't be impetuous. Don't make brash and abrasive decisions, you know, based on just, you know, because you have ADHD. That's not the right answer either, right? But don't delay either. There's a balance. But if you really think about it in your own life, and it doesn't have to be with big decisions. If you focus too much on the past and you get stuck there, you can't move forward. You sit and you harp on it. There are certain people you talk to and they're still living back in, you know, and you can't get them off it. And I don't mean to fault them. It's just, that's their reality. And it's, you can't get them to move off of it. And similarly, there are people who are stuck in the present tense because they can't envision, oh my gosh, what's going to be in 5 years? And you're not moving now to move towards a goal. The past can hamper it, and the future can hamper it. There is an aspect of living in the moment of today. That's really part of the message here. And just the Talmud uses a very interesting analogy. It describes living in this world like a wedding. A lot of commentary what exactly that means. But I read something recently that really struck me since I am making a wedding in about 3 weeks, God willing. And before a wedding, it's so stressful. There's so many worries that you have of the logistics, the finances, the working it out with the other family. I mean, there's just a lot of stress before. And then there's a lot of stress afterwards also about how am I going to fulfill all what I made out to do or pay back the loans or whatever it is, you know, how do I take on this and how am I going to cover that? And, you know, and which set of parents are they going to go to? And I don't want to step on anybody's toe. There's stress before and there's stress after. But at the wedding, you put that all aside and you enjoy the simcha. You enjoy the celebration of that moment. They want to suggest that that's what the Talmud means, that this world should be like a wedding. Yes, there's stresses before and there's stresses after, and life is full of it. But if you keep focus on what you have in front of you now and the opportunities to grow from it now, celebrate. Grab it and grow. Good question, but we can still move on. That's what we started with, the Israelis, right? I don't know. The past is, you know, and what's going to be with the future? I don't know. Nobody knows that they're moving forward. They're moving forward. There's no choice. This is the opportunity that presents itself now. You can get stuck in the, you know, you have those who are still living the glory days of 67 and 73, right? Not a great place to be living right now because the reality is we're not in 67, 73 anymore. And there are those who are freaking out because what's going to be if we go in or if we don't go in, right? And everybody's, there's 120 members in the Knesset. Guess how many opinions there are? 240. You can get stuck. Too much yesterday, too much tomorrow. Ayom. It has to be today. It has to be today. Okay. One last. In the Amidah, right? In the Amidah, the Shemona Esrei that we say three times a day. So one of the middle blessings talks about justice. We want justice in the world, right? Should really get the exact wording now.
I don't want to resist.
You know, but I think it's in the back here, so we should be good. Yes. Hashiva shoteinu kavarishona, turn our judges to the way they used to be, where there was a sense of justice. V'yoatzeinu kivatchila, and our advisors, those who gave counsel like we had back then. V'haser mimenu, and to please God, remove from us yagon va'anacha. Yagon is a sense of sorrow, anacha is groaning, a sense of stress and anxiety. We ask God to remove that from us because it's stressful. Especially when there's no justice or injustices in the world. It's hard to live that way. So we ask God to help us and to remove some of that anxiety. Umaloch aleinu, and you, God, should rule over us, be the king. Bechesed uberachem, and with kindness and with mercy. Vitzadkenu b'mishpat, and with righteousness there should be judgment. Blessed are you, Hashem, the king who loves righteousness and justice. The words haser mimenu yagon va'anacha, remove from us anxiety, sorrow, stress, that the first letters of those four words spell the word ayin, today. You want to know how to remove stress and anxiety, you have to learn to, yes, look to the past, yes, look to the future, but you do have to live in the today. The past is the past, the future. But what's today called? What's
today?
It's called the present.
Mm-hmm. It's a gift.
Mm-hmm. this, there's more to this idea about the patience of Purim, of where Haman is rush, run in and get it, and quick, and he's so quick to go. What happens? His ending? He's hanged on the hangman, on the gallows he intended for Mordecai. And Esther, slow, methodical, patient. Those are all true. Whatever, we can focus on that another time. But this is the trait of when it talks about Purim. Focus, when you listen to the story, see who rushes quickly into things, who takes their time, and who acts when the opportunity is ready to be seized. Go through the Megillah as you listen to it. Read it. Find which character fits which one of these time frames. You'll see. The ones who come out on top are the ones that are methodical. They have a sense of a global picture, but they go when it's time to go. And they act when it's time to act. Now, Ayom. Going back to what we started with, maybe that's the other reason why the Torah begins with the letter Bet. Because it's teaching us that message of that, yes, there's behind, you got to take a look, but which direction do you need to be focusing? From here, go forward. Kadima, as they say in Hebrew. Kadima, go forward.
Is that what that means?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Literally means go east. That's what it means. That. Kedem is the east. But yeah.
Kedem is east.
Kedem is east.
I didn't know that either.
Kedem also, it means from before, because they always traveled west. So the east was where you started.
But when it's Kedem, like the one, like the grape juice?
Yeah. Kedem. The name that's a direction, as opposed to where your origin, where you came from, early civilization. And there's a few places in the Torah where the word is they traveled mikedem, from the east. But Rashi and many commentaries point out that it's symbolic that the people that they were talking about were leaving their old ancestral places. They were moving away. So they say moving away from God. They don't want the past. It specifically says it about the building of the tower. You know that story before Noah, the flood? Yes. So it says that they traveled Mikedem. That they were going away Mikadmono Shel Olam, from the origin of the world. They wanted to do away with God.
So why is it called Kadima?
Kadima means let's go forward.
That's
where it came from. Yes, agreed. It's a modern Hebrew word. It means to go forward. I don't think they took the historical context.
That you're in sixth or seventh or eighth grade. That's what it means.
And you're moving forward.
And you're moving forward. I see. I just
know that. You'll hear not only in battle, but you'll hear a teacher telling you, Kadima. Well, let's go. Everybody, let's keep moving. Keep moving.
I'm not going to use.
I am too.
In what context?
I'm
going to
tell my kids, Kadima.
Yala, yala. Most years, yala, Kadima. That's what they say. Yala, Kadima. Yala. Move, move, move. Yala, yala. Come on.
My son doesn't want to go to school.
Today. Hayom. Today.
He's looking at me like a scout. As he probably does.
The other one to think about, we didn't have a chance to talk about the other song that I was debating was Little Orphan Annie.
Tomorrow.
So that's tomorrow.
We love that song.
Okay. So I tied it in yesterday and tomorrow. Yes. But I was going to talk about the fact that the Megillah, it makes a very strong point. What's Esther, a unique genealogy? What's her story, right? What's the only piece of information we're told about Esther?
She's Mordecai's niece.
Okay. One more piece. Why
she's
is
an orphan.
She's an orphan.
Very good.
She's an orphan.
Little orphan tomorrow.
That's what we say. I call it little orphan Esther. That's exactly right. That's exactly. It's the only real information we're given about Esther.
Well, she's beautiful. She was beautiful.
Okay. Give me a historical context. Like, who is she from? Who are parents? What tribe does she come from? Don't you want to know who she is?
She
plays the most pivotal role in the story. Don't I want
to know why
his, placing her in historical terms helps me know who she is. I don't need her to be in history.
I'm not following. I'm not following. To me, anytime I talk about leadership, I want to know who are they? King David came from what tribe? Give me some background to King David. I can tell you exactly. He's from the tribe of Judah. His father was Jesse. I got the whole genealogy. Who's this girl? Who's this girl? Esther. Yeah, he raised her. Why? She was an orphan.
She was an orphan.
Why is that significant?
Where she come from?
Hey, we're told.
Okay.
We're told.
And so
the verse actually says there was a Jewish man in Shushan, the capital, whose name was Mordecai, the son of Yair, who was the son of Shimil, the son of Kish, a Benjaminite from the tribe of Benjamin.
Oh.
Boom! I got his whole genealogy now.
Great.
Okay. Next verse. Who had been exiled from the Jerusalem fight. Next verse. And he had reared Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, since she had neither father nor mother.
His uncle's father.
Good straight.
Not so his father.
Could be. It could be.
The dad.
Old age. I don't know how to die.
So he. It was his uncle, but if it was his
cousin, it's his cousin. His yeah. uncle's daughter is his cousin.
So isn't she a Benjamin?
Cousin.
I mean, not necessarily because
it could be on his mother's side. It could be on his mother's side. It could be his uncle from his mother's side. My research leads me to believe that she is Mordecai's brothers on the Mordecai Benjamin side. I do think so. I think I have something in the Talmud that indicates that.
Wait, it says that she's Mordecai's uncle's daughter?
Yep.
But I thought in the story she referred to that he's her uncle. But she's not.
No, the verse says this woman, Vayihi Omenes Hadassah, he was raising Hadassah, he Esther, she is Esther, Bat Dodo, the daughter of his uncle. That's the literal translation.
Okay.
Bat
Dodo. Because I thought in the English story,
daughter
she's
of
her
his uncle.
That's literally the word. In Hebrew, a dod is an uncle.
It's his first father.
It's his cousin. Some say it was his niece, but the literal translation is uncle is a cousin. Is a cousin.
Right.
Yeah. Bat Dodo, the daughter of his uncle. I had one of my nieces who I went to who I saw
married to.
She's all of I'll say she's six, maybe.
Benjamin.
So they all made a big deal. Uncle Tzvi's here, Uncle Tzvi, Uncle Tzvi, that's my So instead of writing, she wanted to make me a crayon to make me a picture. So she signed it Miriam. Okay. But she, instead of writing Dod Tzvi, which is Hebrew for Uncle Tzvi, she wrote it out. Aleph Nun Kuf Lamed. Uncle, like phonetic, Uncle Tzvi. I have it hanging on my fridge. Uncle Tzvi. I said, I understand Hebrew. You can write those.
So she's not sure.
She's not. I don't know.
He's from America. His Hebrew can't be too good.
American
grandma.
He can't be too
sure. She's all upset. Nah. Uncle T. So it's something for you to think about. We're not going to talk about it. Why is the fact that she is an orphan so important in the story? We're not told anything else other than she's good looking. That's all we know. Very strange. Why is that significant? Think about it. That's your homework.
I need to make myself a note so I can remember it. Oh,
well, lucky. I know. The next day after.
You have an answer?
I was like, that was so good last night. What did you want?
That's a great question. Why is that the piece, the only piece of information we're given? Because she's an orphan.
And it must
and when she saved,
because otherwise it wouldn't save in him.
Thank you. That's exactly right.
Well, she had to be with Mordecai.
Then see, she grew up next door. You know? They're in the same shtetl.
He was the one that gave her all of the positive qualities.
Fine. So why is it important that she was an orphan?
Because maybe if she had been with her parents, she wouldn't have had the qualities that she needed to have to save the Jewish people.
Okay.
She wouldn't have been in the right place at the right time.
Maybe. I think there's more to it. There has to be.
Because
it's not just, it could have just simply said Mordechai raised Esther. Then I know that he had the influence on her. There seems to be a specific emphasis on a syllable about her being no father and no an orphan. Very significant.
She knew the family. She used to belong to a family. So by saving the Jewish people, she saved her big family.
She didn't want to do it.
She was scared. Did you hear what happened to Vashti?
True. Yeah.
There's a book you can read that'll tell you the whole story.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, something to think about. All right. Great. Wonderful. Thank you for joining.
Thank you. Do you want to pick a new date?
A new date?